It is 4 hours universal time.
A top Liberian medical official quarantined for possible Ebola infection. VOA speaks with an Ebola survivor. I'm Victor Beatty reporting from Washington. Liberia's chief medical authority has placed herself in quarantine following the death of her deputy. The French press agency, citing health and humanitarian sources, say Dr. Bernice Don took the action after her assistant died Thursday. Liberia is the hardest hit West African nation with nearly 3,500 infected people. Christian preacher Alonso Duncan Sunday said the epidemic is God's judgment on the nation.
Everyone sees it as a plague from God, as a punishment from the national level, because nationally our government is not people-centered. Our government is highly corrupt.
A Guinean student who traveled to Senegal and became the country's lone Ebola patient has returned home fully recovered. Karim Kamara spoke with him and filed this report.
Mamadou Alimo Diallo says he went to Senegal in August to see his uncle and to inquire about attending school there. He tells VOA he did not know he was sick at the time. He says he felt nothing until 48 hours after arrival in Dakar, when the first symptoms appeared. Diallo's ability to cross a closed border raised alarm bells, but his case appears isolated, and no one else in Senegal had contracted the vicious disease, which is killing about 50% of those infected in this current outbreak. Diallo returned to Guinea's capital, Conakry, last week. He says he was happy to be home, but the happiness was short-lived when he was told some of his family was not as lucky as he was. He says his mother and sister died at the Donga Hospital here in Conakry.
That's Karim Kamara reporting from Conakry. This is VOA News. An American doctor who was exposed to Ebola while in Sierra Leone has been flown to the United States for treatment. The patient will be admitted to the National Institutes of Health Clinical Center for observation and to enroll in a clinical study. The NIH also said the physician will be in a special isolation unit out of an abundance of caution. African conflicts came under the spotlight this weekend at the UN General Assembly, including a high-level meeting on Mali involving Secretary General Ban Ki-moon. VOA's Margaret Bashir reports.
Mr. Ban addressed the summit in French and is heard here through an interpreter.
Peace and stability must return to Mali so that refugees may return to their homes, so that human rights may be protected, and so that public services may be reestablished.
He warned that the security situation remains extremely fragile, particularly in the north, where fighting among armed groups has continued despite agreements to stop. Meeting participants, which included the French foreign minister, expressed strong support for peace talks underway in Algiers between the government and rebel groups. Mali's president, Ibrahim Boubacar Keita, said obstacles to peace are surmountable with political willingness from both sides. He's heard here through an interpreter.
The government of Mali is prepared to discuss any option which could find the best institutional formula for shared governance and which would promote the effective, genuine development of the communities concerned.
Margaret Bashir, VOA News, the United Nations.
Somalia is facing a growing hunger crisis. The UN warns more than a million Somalis are struggling to meet daily nutritional needs. Myra Gracier heads the Somalia European Commission humanitarian aid effort, known as ECHO.
It's been a bad harvest. There's not enough water for livestock, which means they have to migrate far. And there are also military operations ongoing, which has caused displacement. Now, when people displace, it means they cannot cultivate when they are displaced, and they need assistance at that time. But also, the supply to the markets has been disrupted. So the traders are not able to bring food into some of these areas, and that has put even more pressure. It means the prices have increased sometimes twofold, and people are really not able to meet their food needs in that situation.
In August, the UN humanitarian coordinator for Somalia said rapidly rising malnutrition and food shortages resemble warning signs that preceded Somalia's 2011 famine, in which an estimated 260,000 perished. 21 occupants of a minibus were killed Sunday in northern Guinea-Bissau after their vehicle hit a landmine. 15 others were wounded. The country is in the midst of 2 days of national mourning. Officials have launched an investigation, but say the mine could have been left over from the country's war for independence.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Monday, September 29th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Liberia's chief medical officer is under Ebola quarantine.
When you come in contact with this virus, or you know someone who has come in contact with the virus, the safest thing to do for the people you love and for yourself is to set yourself apart from everyone and observe the symptoms.
Louis Brown is Liberia's information minister. Sudan's president threatens opposition with arrest even as he continues to talk national dialogue. Lesotho leaders will discuss their political problems in South Africa on Tuesday. And Libya swears in a new prime minister.
The swearing-in ceremony was brief, and Prime Minister Athini vowed to preserve the independence of the country, defend its security, and respect the constitution and the law.
That's VOA correspondent Edward Urania in Cairo. The immigration status of Zimbabweans in South Africa has been made a little clearer, and a community radio station in Nairobi, Kenya, provides reliable information to its residents. Those stories plus Mark Oldman's Sports and our Listener of the Day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. The Liberian government said its chief medical officer, who has been leading the fight against Ebola, does not have the deadly virus, at least for now. But Minister of Information Louis Brown says Dr. Bernice Dan took the liberty to put herself in quarantine after her special assistant died from the Ebola virus. Brown tells me that while the Liberian government did not wish for this example, he hopes every Liberian will emulate the example of Dr. Dan.
Bernice Da has been one of our leading frontline fighters in this virus. In fact, she's led the government's fight, so she has acted properly. She has placed herself in self-isolation. I spoke to her 2 days ago, and she sounded very well, and she reassured all of us that she's doing pretty okay under the circumstances.
Is there a particular message that you think what Dr. Dan has done that the government would like to project to the people out there?
Exactly. And this is what Dr. Dan has been helping us say to the people of Liberia. When you come in contact with this virus, or you know someone who has come in contact with the virus, the safest thing to do for the people you love and for yourself is to set yourself apart from everyone and observe the symptom. If you come down with the symptoms which is similar to malaria, similar to typhoid, similar to dysentery, then we can reach you quickly with the help you need. And so Dr. Dan is actually here. We didn't reach for this example, but it gives us an opportunity for Dr. Dan, as she's always done, to lead by an excellent example. Let that transmission end with you, hopefully, and then we can give you the help you need so that you cannot pass it on to the people you love.
What can you tell us about the shortage of beds for people infected with Ebola? And tell us about the Americans who have arrived in the country. How quickly is their work being done?
Well, very quickly. We're beginning to see our partners are moving at the rate at which we would like to see. And so what is happening now, given the increased level of public information, public awareness, you are having more and more people turning themselves in at medical facilities. We still continue to confront the situation of shortages of beds. We must continue, not just in Monserrato, we must continue to make sure that we can increase treatment facilities. This is why the recent news about the opening of a treatment center in Bong County has been welcome. Another holding center by an NGO has been turned over to the CB facility, making it at least two facilities dedicated to the treatment of Ebola in Bong County. Work is ongoing to have one come online in Magibi. We've challenged ourselves that within the period of 3 weeks, we must get an Ebola treatment unit open in the southeast. So the closer we can bring treatment facility to communities and to homes, the sooner we believe we can get a grip on this site.
Liberia's Information Minister Louis Brown was speaking with me from the capital, Monrovia. South Africa's Deputy President Cyril Ramaphosa is scheduled to meet senior officials in Lesotho's coalition government tomorrow, Tuesday, to try help resolve political disagreements that have created tension and instability in the Southern African Kingdom. Kuabani Teko, Chief Whip of Lesotho's Senate, says Lesotho Prime Minister Thomas Tabani has too much power stipulated in the Constitution. Teko tells reporter Peter Clotty that the ongoing political dispute between Prime Minister Tabani and his deputy has created too much tension and insecurity for the Basotho people.
Because of the coalition nature of government, there's also a problem between our Prime Minister and his deputy, who is from the other party in this coalition. So the issue of consultation was not really taken well, because in our constitution there's nowhere where the prime minister is obliged maybe to consult when he does anything to his partner in the coalition. So we're still having a bad problem, sir, on the ground.
How are Basotho taking this stalemate, and how best can this be resolved?
It is very unsettling indeed, because nobody is sure what is going to happen. There's been an attempted coup, which was very clear. Now, that has really made the people very unsettled on our political spectrum. And lastly, I might say, it's not settled until Tamudi himself really relinquishes power and maybe make way for the gentleman who is entering, who is known as Mr. or Lieutenant General Maaparangwe Mahau. So we are having that problem at the moment. So Basotho are very unsettled. There's so much uncertainty, and of course the business is really not doing well because of this. Every time it's 6 o'clock in the evening, everybody wants to get to his own household to make sure that he does not meet a bullet or something like that.
Some people are proposing that perhaps there should be a constitutional amendment that would strengthen the king to take certain measures to restore law and order, as well as maintain the country's territorial integrity and stability in the country. What is your assessment on that?
Well, yes, we still have that. The king is supported by the Council of State, which, of course, confines a lot of people from higher offices. So we just need to maybe to have that group have some teeth so that they can help whenever there's a problem and have some certain powers of saying, now the back will last here or will stay with us whenever there's a problem. But right now, it is the Prime Minister and not Prime Minister alone, and of course with these other people who are realistically very trusted, people who are very near him. So most of is now with the Prime Minister. But I would hate to see a monarch who can take that, because I do not want to put the monarchy in danger. I do not want to see my king being beheaded like Charles I in England in the older times.
Kuabani Teko is Chief Whip of Lesotho Senate. He was speaking with reporter Peter Clotty from the capital, Maseru. The new interim Libyan government of Prime Minister Abdallah Al-Thani was sworn in by the Libyan parliament on Sunday in the eastern city of Tobruk. But the Islamist militia coalition that controls the capital, Tripoli, refuses to recognize Mr. Al-Thani and supports its own government. Edward Urania reports for VOA from Cairo.
The swearing-in ceremony was brief, and Prime Minister Al-Thani vowed to preserve the independence of the country, defend its security, and respect the constitution and the law. He promised to uphold the interests of the people and to defend the principles and goals of the February 17th revolution. Mr. Al-Thani's cabinet was small, with just under a dozen ministers. Libyan political leaders dubbed the new cabinet an interim crisis government. The Islamist Fajr militia coalition, which controls the capital, Tripoli, says it supports its own government, which has yet to be officially sworn in. Akila Saleh, who heads the internationally recognized parliament in Tobruk, told lawmakers that the new government would work to build a strong state, to preserve peace and stability, to defend the people's interests, and to guarantee public services, including health and education. Arab satellite channels reported Libyan political leaders have been invited to a national dialogue session Monday under the auspices of the United Nations. It was not immediately clear, however, if all political groups were planning to attend. Ahmed Al-Atrash, who teaches politics and international relations at the University of Tripoli, tells VOA it is important for all factions to attend the national dialogue session.
I think it's better to sit and negotiate and get a way out of this. We have now two parliaments, two governments, even though the one is recognized by the international community and one government, but on the ground, we need to listen to each other and bring everything on the negotiation table. I'm not pessimistic in that. I'm optimistic.
Despite recent bouts of fighting, both in the capital, Tripoli, and the eastern capital of Benghazi, the situation on the ground, argues Al-Atrash, is getting back to normal. Al Arabiya TV reported, however, that fighting took place in the Tripoli suburb of Fashloun and that Islamist militiamen fired mortars and rocket-propelled grenades at their opponents. Amateur video showed plumes of smoke rising from rocket strikes and the noisy clatter of shells falling. Edward Uranian for VOA News, Cairo.
It's Monday morning, September 29th, and you're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Daybreak Africa time is coming up at 17 minutes past the hour. Sudanese President Omar al-Bashir has again called on political groups to respond to his call for a national dialogue to build what he calls an inclusive society. But even as he did, Mr. Bashir threatened to arrest and detain National Umar Party leader Sadiq al-Mahdi upon his return to Sudan if al-Mahdi does not renounce the Paris Declaration, which calls for a radical political change in Sudan. Information Minister Ahmed Bilal tells me al-Mahdi should not link himself with an armed opposition.
He didn't say that he would be arrested. He said that Omar Party, if they want peace and they want the dialogue, he shouldn't stick to Paris Declaration. Paris Declaration disjoined him with what they call the revolutionary movement. And this is, we don't actually convince about what is said about the revolutionary movement. Sadiq al-Mahdi is supposed to be one of the leaders of opposition, not armed opposition. And he linked himself with the armed opposition, that is all.
The president said that anyone who wants to talk about freedom should not talk about national security, but the national security is controlled by the ruling National Congress Party.
No, actually, he said they shouldn't talk about the armed forces. Look here, we now actually see what's happening in other countries. In fact, we shouldn't, by the name of freedom or transformation or something like that, make our country a host for extremists and violence. This is what Bashir said, and everybody in Sudan agreeing with that. Freedom doesn't mean chaos. Freedom doesn't mean that we give the law a holiday. We should respect the law. We should respect our army. We should respect our national pillars of integrity in the community. Otherwise, Sudan will be another Iraq or the Syria or Libya or something like that.
President Bashir has said that Sudan is not suffering from an economic collapse, but there are economic problems in your country.
Yes, this is true. Sudan is not the only country in the world that are facing the economic problem or crisis. Many countries have got this, and they went out of it. Sudan also has, we admit that we are suffering from some economical problems. This is because of many, many things, actually. And the major part of it, that is the cessation of the South, which went out with 80% of our income. But believe me, we are going to overcome that, and Sudan will never collapse, and it will go on and will hold on.
President Bashir also said, Mr. Minister, that the elections scheduled for 2015 will take place as scheduled. Can the election really take place without bringing on board any of the opposition?
First of all, this is by constitution. By constitution, this is an obligatory thing. The election should take place on the 15th of April. If, and I say if, we all come to the dialogue,
all the national groups come to the national dialogue, and we have reached a conclusion about all our problems, then we suggested that we should postpone. But we cannot say Bashir or anybody else have no actually political support or constitutional support to postpone the elections without going to negotiations.
Ahmed Bilal is Sudan's information minister. He was speaking with me from the capital, Khartoum. Zimbabweans in South Africa got some clarity last week on the process ahead that will determine their ability to stay in the country legally. The clarification was given by South Africa's Home Affairs Minister, Malusi Gigaba.
Speaking in Pretoria, Minister Gigaba said in South Africa is already to handle applications and implement the project for 245,000 permits holders of the previous program implemented in 2009. Gigaba said the department and the visa facilitation services have completed all necessary preparations to process prospective applications for the ZSP.
As we had announced, there will be 10 application centers for those applying for the ZSP. These will include 4 new centers in Midrand, in Gauteng, Cape Town, in the Western Cape, Polokwane, in Limpopo, and Durban, in KwaZulu-Natal. The remaining 6 centers are in George, Port Elizabeth, Kimberley, Bloemfontein, Nelspruit, and Rustenburg.
Gigaba said there will be 10 application centers and 120 staff members to deal directly with the ZSP permits. And as initially planned from October 1st, he said Zimbabweans must apply online before being called for interviews at application centers.
From the 1st of October, people can start applying online via the website and must not go to the VFS application centers. They will apply online via the website and then get an invitation for interviews, which will then be the time when they will be expected to present themselves at the application centers for interviews.
Applications for the ZSP will cost Zimbabweans 870 rands, which the Minister of Home Affairs says is in line with similar visas and permit charges. Minister Gigaba emphasized that the Department of Immigration will monitor all concerns about computer literacy and internet access, but added he's confident internet access for all those applying will be sufficient.
And that was Tatenda Gombo of View Zimbabwe program reporting. In a large settlement in the Nairobi, Kenya area known as Kibera, there is a community radio station that residents rely on to keep them informed and entertained. Pamoja FM has grown to be a trusted media outlet run by locals for local residents. Lenny Ruvaga has more on the station's impact and the role in fostering unity.
This is Pamoja FM, located in the heart of Kibera, Kenya's largest informal settlement. Pamoja, which means unity in Swahili, started operations in 2006 and is run by local residents for the local community, made up of a million people from diverse ethnic backgrounds. Today, 40-year-old station program manager Philip Muhatia is winding up a show on peace. Muhatia says he takes pride in the community trust the station has earned and its role in healing some of the divisions after the 2007 post-election riots here.
This show and this radio station has actually helped the people of Kibera and its environs to stay together as one.
Pamoja FM is run by volunteers and offers internship opportunities to budding journalists. When Adam Hussein founded the station, he hoped to give a voice to disempowered residents by highlighting issues that directly touch their daily lives.
Our program is entirely educative to our community and give them information on what's happening within them and around them, and also entertaining them.
And this is why Anthony Malalu, a vegetable vendor at a nearby market, is one of Pamoja FM's most ardent fans. Malalu says he never misses a program and has been listening for 7 years.
Pamoja FM is grassroots. It educates us about peace. They have great programs that touch on issues affecting locals and neighboring areas. Also, it encourages unity, community, and all the villages.
The station transmits over a 40-kilometer radius around Nairobi and has a listenership of approximately 800,000 people. Pamoja FM runs on a monthly budget of $1,200 just to cover overhead. Lenny Ruvaga for VOA News, Nairobi, Kenya.
It's time now for Daybreak Africa Sports. Here is Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Good Monday morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, James. In our Daybreak Africa Sports News, we begin with athletics. Kenyan Dennis Kimeto clocked 2 hours, 2 minutes and 57 seconds to set a world record at the BMW Berlin Marathon on Sunday. He improves on the previous mark by 26 seconds run by his compatriot Wilson Kipsang at this race last year. Kenyan Emmanuel Mutai was second in 2 hours, 3 minutes and 13 seconds. Tirfe Tsegay clocked 2 hours, 20 minutes and 18 seconds to lead Feisa Tedesa in a 1-2 Ethiopian triumph in the women's race. In basketball, Mali beat hosts Egypt 73-65 to win their fifth Africa Women's Under-18 Basketball Championship title in Cairo on Saturday. Mozambique edged Algeria 51-48 to clinch the bronze medal. Angola beat Tunisia 59-47 to place fifth, while Ivory Coast mauled Botswana 114-17 to place seventh. In rugby, Britain's Welsh Warriors beat Argentina 24-17 to win the Safaricom Safari 7-a-side tournament in Nairobi, Kenya on Saturday. The Polynesian invitational side Samurai prevailed over South Africa's Western Province 31-26 to clinch the bronze medal. Kenya's second string side Shuja edged New Zealand's Auckland Metro 17-14 in the plate final. Germany outplayed South Africa's Sharks 26-21 in the bowl final, while South Africa's Golden Lions came from behind to beat Uganda 26-14. Uganda dominated the school's contest. Chadondo under 19 beat Kenya's Impala 14-7 in the boys' final, while Uganda beat Kenyan side Komra 14-0 in the girls' final. In football, Algeria's Entente Setif qualified for their first ever Orange Africa Champions League final despite going down 2-3 to their hosts TP Mazembe of the Democratic Republic of Congo in Lubumbashi on Sunday. Entente Setif won the first leg 2-1 and advanced on the away goal rule. On Saturday, the Democratic Republic of Congo's AS Vita edged Tunisian hosts CS Sfaxien 2-1 in Sfax. AS Vita won this tournament in 1973 and are back in the final courtesy of a 3-1 aggregate. Finally, Egypt's El Ahly edged Cameroon's Cotton Sports 2-1 in the Orange Africa Confederations Cup in Cairo on Sunday. El Ahly advanced to the final on a 3-1 aggregate. On Saturday, Ivory Coast's Sewe Sports and Republic of Congo's AC Leopards drew 0-0 in Dolly C. Sewe Sports progressed to the final on a 1-0 aggregate. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Mark. Have a good day. And briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. An American doctor who was exposed to Ebola while in Sierra Leone has been flown to the United States. The doctor was flown to a regional airport in Maryland on Sunday and walked off the plane wearing a white protective suit. And Libya's internationally recognized parliament swore in Prime Minister Abdallah Al-Thani's government on Sunday as the UN seeks to keep the country from total collapse. That's it for this Monday, September 29th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for starting this week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckfro, reporters Peter Clutty and Ricky Shryak, as well as post-editor Mark Ouma, along with our engineer Carl Sterling, I'm James Butte in Washington, hoping that you will have a productive week.
Next time on Straight Talk Africa, Eric James Shigongo, his story from poverty to success. The African author, motivational speaker, and media owner joins us next time on VOA Africa.
Hello, this is Sunday Shomari. Join me every Monday for your lighthearted show, Let's Talk. right, Monday at 17:30 UTC for interviews, great music, and a whole lot of laughter. Right here at the VOA Africa. Keep it locked. VOA Africa, don't miss.